Welcome to Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia. I'm joined here by my co-host, Dr. Danielle Scherer of the Medical University of South Carolina. Our guests are two authors of a BMJ study published this week showing that delayed clamping of the umbilical cord results in improved iron stores at 4 months of age relative to those clamped immediately. There was no evidence of increased risk from the procedure, and an editorialist suggests that the findings may encourage a change in clinical practice. Dr. Ola Anderson, the paper's first author, is a consultant in neonatology and a member of the Department of Women's and Children's Health at Uppsala University. Dr. Magnus Domeloff is an associate professor and head of pediatrics at Umeå University, both in Sweden. Welcome to Clinical Conversations. Dr. Anderson, what got you interested in this question of when to clamp the cord?
Well, actually, it was my wife, who is a midwife, who came home one day and said that we should start to practice early clamping at the hospital I work. And I got instinctively upset and started to learn about the subject. And all this started the article that is now published, actually.
And so she is an advocate for early clamping or later clamping?
Well, midwives usually are advocates for delayed clamping, as okay. They find it as a natural birth. Uh-huh. But in Sweden, at the time, the common way of doing clamping was early clamping. One of my first studies was to phone around to see how how clamping was performed in Sweden in 2006. And by then, the two-thirds of the babies were clamped early in Sweden.
So what's the big rush, I wonder? BMJ's editorialist wrote that in the UK, most obstetricians and midwives clamp within say, 2 minutes and then pass off the baby as quickly as possible, to quote him.
Well, actually, it seems like there is a lot of blood. One-third of the total blood in the child, the child's blood, is in the placenta, and two-thirds are in the child's body. And if you clamp directly, this blood in the placenta, of course, stays there. But if you delay the clamping with 3 minutes, earlier research has shown that most of that blood will go back into the child and raise its blood volume with about 30 to 50%.
Hmm. And so it does sound like that three-minute mark is not random. It's not 2 minutes or 4 minutes, that it really is. Seemingly 3 minutes is sort of the sweet spot.
We chose that number after studies that was made actually in a Swedish-American collaboration in the late 60s. Hmm. And there they could find that, because they did sequentially measurements and could see that after 3 minutes, there would not be any more blood going into the child.
Okay.
So that's why we chose that time.
No additional advantage after the 3 minutes.
Exactly. Mm.
And there are several different definitions of late clamping, but usually it would be defined as after 2 to 3 minutes or after the pulsations in the umbilical cord stops.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
And if I could just mention that this is a very common explanation, that you should stop when the pulsation stops. But the pulsations, they are arterial, and that is blood going from the child into the placenta.
Uh-huh.
But what we are interested in here is, of course, the venous return of blood from the placenta into the child.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, the pulsations are not of interest if you want to know when the transfusion has stopped.
So I guess the flip side of the question is, are there any disadvantages to late clamping? And I know in your introduction you mentioned some earlier studies that found maybe some of the adverse events could be polycythemia or hyperbilirubinemia with subsequent need for phototherapy. It didn't appear that you found any of those problems in the group that you studied.
No. The hyperbilirubinemia and the polycythemia, they come from studies from the 70s where you usually have both preemies and full-term babies in the studies, and they were quite small. There is a Cochrane report from 2008 that says that there are a little bit more jaundice in the late clamping group, but
okay.
They base this on a lot of published data. There is a JAMA report from 2007, I believe, who can't show any differences. This was a meta-analysis. They couldn't show any differences in jaundice. And we have just studied the level of bilirubin, which was exactly the same between the groups. Mm-hmm. And we have also studied how many children that needed phototherapy. And there were no differences in either way.
One of the other things I noticed, there was a little bit of a difference between the groups in the percent of babies that ended up in the neonatal intensive care unit, which was a little bit higher in the delayed clamping. Did any of those numbers concern you?
Of course, it concerned us, and we tried to analyze it a little bit deeper. And when we tried to find out what of these babies that would, there was no significant difference from the beginning,
of course.
This could just be randomly. But
Even
if we tried to analyze it, the thing we could wait for was the respiratory problems, jaundice, perhaps hyperglycemia or polycythemia. Mm-hmm. And in those diagnoses, they were more comparable. We had some child with a heart problem in the delayed clamping group.
Uh-huh.
I think I could say quite confidently that the little bit higher
was
numbers
probably not related.
No, exactly.
In any other potential adverse effects that you guys could think of, maybe hypothermia or?
Well, actually, if you start to look through the literature about delayed and early clamping, the first days of a child's life is very well researched. The first research about this was in the 19th century, and you haven't seen any long-lasting effects. What you can see is that the cardiac output is a little bit higher in the delayed cord clamping group the first hours, and you can see also different cardiac values being different, but they all disappear very soon. And otherwise, you couldn't find any differences. So that was very well researched. So what we wanted to ask and what to find out is the long-term consequences. Mm. Not so many papers about this.
Okay, gotcha.
Actually, the boost of 30% extra blood volume has been suggested both to may have adverse effects, but it has also been suggested to have beneficial effects, because to benefit the cardiorespiratory changes that need to occur after birth. So, but we didn't observe any changes, any differences in any direction with regard to respiratory or cardiac symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that was the editorial. They mentioned that perhaps also in the when you have a child that needs to be rescued just after the birth,
mm-hmm.
because it's not being well, perhaps this extra transfusion would help the child. By now, you usually clamp directly and put the baby on a table to do resuscitation.
Mm-hmm.
In preterm babies, it has been shown to have beneficial effects with regard to cardiorespiratory function.
I'm sorry, Dr. Domloff, in what babies?
In preterm babies.
Oh, in preterm. I wanted to ask you, Dr. Domloff, about there was no difference. I'm not a clinician, so I forgive my ignorance, but there was no difference between the hemoglobin values in the groups. Is hemoglobin, would that not be relevant with an increased blood volume?
Yes, there was actually a difference in hemoglobin in the blood sample taken at 2 days of age. So actually we saw that there was an increased risk of anemia, defined as hemoglobin, less than 140 grams per liter at 2 days of age, but there was no remaining, at that time there was no difference in ferritin. Ferritin would represent the iron stores. So obviously that means that the babies have had an increased blood volume and blood concentration of hemoglobin in blood, but there was not yet any difference in ferritin. But what has happened then during the first 4 months when we check the babies again at 4 months, the ferritin has increased, showing a higher iron stores. It was 45% higher in the late clamped group, but there was no difference in hemoglobin. Now, we interpret that as that the babies, even in the early clamped group, they have not developed iron deficiency anemia. However, we saw that there were an increased risk for iron deficiency. Mm. And actually, it's not really expected at 4 months of age for a healthy term baby to have developed iron deficiency anemia. That would usually come later.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, your question about the hemoglobin at 2 days of age, actually we saw that the significant difference there is a sort of proof that we really had a transfusion that was larger in the delayed clamping group.
Okay.
So that was important, of course, that we had this difference. And the other difference that we used as a mark that the children had really had a transfusion was that the weight of the children was 95 grams higher in the delayed clamped group, and that would represent about 90 milliliters of blood, and that is exactly the theoretical volume that you would expect. So that was almost too good to be true, that it was exactly that weight difference.
Mm. You note that in the paper that iron deficiency is a particular problem in non-Westernized countries. From what you're saying, though, it seems like you might agree that this practice of delayed clamping is worth adopting universally.
Yes, I think so. And first of all, yes, because iron deficiency and iron deficiency anemia, of course, is less of a problem in the high-income countries than in low-income countries. But still, there is a significant problem also in the U.S. and also in Europe, where we know that there is a connection, a strong association between iron deficiency anemia and also iron deficiency in infancy and later neurological development. Iron is essential for brain development, for several aspects of brain development. And so we really think, and those babies that are at highest risk, those are actually those of the term babies, are those that do not consume enough iron in their complementary feeds between 6 and 12 or maybe up to 18 months of age. And of course, that it's important, of course, to promote a high intake of meat containing foods or iron fortified complementary foods during that age. But it's impossible to have full compliance with those recommendations. So it's much easier if you would have a recommendation. It's much easier, I think, to change the practice of early or delayed clamping than to affect the feeding of all of these babies on a population basis. So I think it's a reasonable and easy and safe method to improve iron status of infants, which may improve their neurological development, even though this has not been shown in our study, but we are following up these babies.
Oh, there is continuing follow up in these babies. Then, well, that's interesting. I mean,
yes, we have.
Go ahead.
Yes, no, I was just we have followed them up at 12 months of age also, and those data we are analyzing them right now, and of course we hope to present them further on, and. Perhaps because, you know, the iron deficiency that Magnus explained should perhaps give, wouldn't be any marked changes in the development until on a later age. So we have to think of perhaps looking at these children even when they get older.
You wonder at the why there is such a rush in Western medicine to hand the baby off?
Yeah, there are three main reasons why you do early clamping. And you can see that in the early 70s, you were a little bit afraid about the polycythemia and the jaundice. Mm-hmm. In the 80s, and certainly in the late 80s, there was a lot of studies about postpartum bleeding from the mother's side. And then there was an obstetric practice called active management of third-stage labor, where early clamping was one part of this practice. And therefore, the international organizations for obstetricians and for midwives, from the early 1990 to middle of 2000, they had international recommendations of early clamping. So internationally, you learned as an obstetrician and a midwife that you should clamp early to prevent postpartum bleeding. And then you have, and this is, you can find the papers about this still. You want to take an acid-based sample from the umbilical cord to see if the child has had any shortage of oxygen or if there's been any disruption in the placental circulation. And you want to do this sample from the umbilical cord before the child starts to breathe. Then it's easier if you clamp the cord. That's the three main reasons.
Well, we look forward to your follow-up findings in this group of babies, and we want to thank you, Dr. Anderson and Dr. Domelo, for talking with us today. Before I let you go, were there any questions that you think we might have asked you that we didn't?
No, but I could repeat that as a clinician, when I speak to other people about this work on the labor department and so on, they usually are concerned about the jaundice.
Mm-hmm.
And I would stress this, that our study can't see any difference, and there is also this meta-analysis from the JAMA that can't see any differences in jaundice. And then we are showing for the first time the difference in iron stores at 4 months of age. And of course, we don't know the consequences of this, but that we want to study more.
Right.
And I can also mention that the obstetric outcomes that we mentioned, that Ola mentioned as reasons to perform early clamping,
mm-hmm.
we have also analyzed those outcomes, those obstetric outcomes, and we are presenting them. It's currently as a manuscript, and we will submit it within the next month, I think.
Wow.
So we'll be published.
Well, let us know. Thank you. Thank you so much again.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That was our 137th edition. Earlier podcasts are available at podcasts.jwatch.org. This podcast, by the way, comes to you from Journal Watch, which is an excellent way to keep up with clinical research whose implications affect how you practice every day. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Ador Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next time. For myself and Dr. Danielle Scherer, thank you for listening.